Welcome to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
And we like to talk about Disney things.
We do.
Specifically this week, we're talking about Up.
Yep.
The shortest title ever.
And Up. Yeah.
Up was released in May of 2009, May 29th, 2009, and is the first film to be nominated both for Best Picture and Best Animated Picture.
Oh.
So.
I did not remember that at all.
Well, that's because in 2008 was when Dark Knight came out. Mm-hmm. Dark Knight was super well received critically and universally, and then didn't get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And so between 2008 and 2009, they upped the
puns.
They added five additional things, so it went from five nominees to 10 nominees.
So they just couldn't find enough movies that were like sad or weird to nominate for Oscars.
Well, like, Dark Knight was the big one, but also WALL-E was, like, pretty heavily. People were trying to say, that deserves a Best Picture nomination, not just this Best Animated Handicap nomination.
The Oscars are really weird about animated films in the first place, so, like...
They are. So it's also... That makes it the second animated picture to ever be nominated for Best Picture because of Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, right.
So, So the movie was inspired by basically the idea of escaping when life is a bummer.
Oh, okay.
And just getting in the house and flying away.
I thought you were going to be like, the movie was inspired by crying forever.
Well, so they talked about, like, this is where this idea came from, but it's just like the feeling of wanting to leave the world behind, which is super vague.
Yeah, that's not...
So they talked about, like, all the different versions of, like, storylines that they tried to derive from
that's
this.
That's a bunch of different stuff.
So, like, initially, it wasn't a house. It was a floating castle.
And
there were two brothers vying to inherit the kingdom.
Oh.
And the first, whoever found this, you know, rare tall bird would get it.
Oh. That would have been cool.
And so then it adjusted and was introduced many elements that were in the movie, but also focused on landing the house in Soviet-era spy airship.
Oh my god. Okay.
And so, as I was researching this and I found that out, it said the concept of the Soviet era spy airship was rewritten due to its similarity to another idea Pixar was developing.
What?
And I don't know what that is.
Is it the super secret Pixar Marvel collab where they make an animated movie about Black Widow? Because I would watch that.
Like, I don't know what it is, and I've not been able to find anything else about Pixar's Soviet-era spy airship.
The only thing I can picture that they would be making in relation to that would be like a movie about Laika, the dog that went to space. Like, that I can see.
You don't think Laika's going to make the movie about Laika?
I think they'll have to fight over it. I think they should both make competing movies, and they should do double features.
And finally, there was some added-in plot about not finding the bird, but finding the bird's egg, because the bird's egg had magical Fountain of Youth properties.
God, this movie's all over the place.
I mean, that's the thing. And that was removed, they said, because it was, like, too zany of an idea. And I'm like...
I'm sorry, half your cast is talking dogs. And there's blimps and giant birds. No, that's not the weirdest thing you can do.
Also, the magical youth egg thing is why Charles Muntz is still alive. And
probably
about the same age as Carl, even though clearly.
I was always very confused by that because...
Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Magical subplot that got deleted from the movie.
Well, that makes a lot more sense.
I mean, it doesn't, but...
No, and if he found that, couldn't he just come back? Oh, never mind. Doesn't even matter. too much stupid to sift through there.
So what I really, really do like about this movie is the character designs.
Yeah.
I love the character designs. And I love how like, caricature they are, because before this, Pixar humans had kind of been Uncanny Valley characters.
A little creepy.
And so doing it this way really kind of helped. They said that Carl is only three heads high, his head.
Yeah.
So he's really squat. And then, like, all the... I guess good guys, all the characters in the movie are based off of either rectangles or circles.
Yeah, I can see that.
Except for the bad guys. The bad guys are all based off of triangles.
Huh.
So.
That's cool.
Yeah,
this is really, I think, where Pixar starts to come into its own as far as animating humans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because, like, this style looks a little more Disney. And then they just keep getting more and more Disney.
Yeah.
As time goes on. Like, Brave looks super Disney.
So. And so, but they said that the thing that ended up being really hard to animate was realistic-looking clothing on all these caricatured humans.
The clothes in this movie are beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, the clothes look more real than the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little strange, but it looks really nice.
So, somebody was quoted as saying, the clothes were harder to animate this movie than the balloons.
Oh, God. Well,
so
that's impressive.
I mean, good for them. The clothes look really good.
They do. Texture-wise, really perfect.
Yeah. Okay, so the movie starts off when Carl's a kid.
Yeah. He's watching a film reel.
He is watching a film reel. I don't know if he went to the movies to watch a movie.
It does not look like it. It looks like he put on all his explorer gear to go watch this film reel and then to entirely skip the movie.
Well, the film reel is called Spirit of Adventure.
Right.
And then he leaves the movie with a balloon that says Spirit of Adventure on it.
But I think he did that himself.
Okay.
I think so. Because, like, I don't know. I just kind of assumed. Because Ellie has it scrawled on the door later. So,
I mean, maybe that might make more sense.
Yeah.
That's his little Spirit of Adventure.
Yeah, that was my assumption.
Because I couldn't figure out, I was like, why were they giving up balloons for the newsreel?
There are so many balloons in this movie, and it should be noted, before we start talking about this movie, I hate balloons. Really stupid. But I am terrified of sudden loud noises, so balloons are the worst.
Our constant threat of such.
Yeah, basically. And there's, like, a million balloons in this movie, which, like, wasn't too bad, because they don't actually pop very often.
No.
But balloons, yeah. Balloons.
So he's playing around being Charles Muntz.
Oh, I love that they kept the, like, narration.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so cute.
And he meets Ellie, who's in a rundown ramshackle house.
Tiny Ellie is, like, the cutest thing in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. Her hair is huge and super staticky. There's a bow, like, kind of half attached to the back of her head, and her teeth are all over the place, and she's just so excited about everything.
Yeah. And then Carl breaks his arm.
Yep.
So, I do like this relationship. This relationship's really cute.
It's the weirdest meet cute. I met you that one time in an abandoned house, and then I broke my arm. Let's get married forever.
Well, Carl never directly says anything to Ellie this whole movie.
No, he doesn't. Like, he doesn't talk that much at all, anyway.
Especially not here at the beginning.
Mm-mm.
So, and then we get the montage of their life.
Yeah.
Which Pixar has, you know, spent 10, 15 years at this point being like, look how we can tell stories with no words and just music. And so then they put it in the movie.
This is probably the worst part of this movie for me. There are 3 points when I cry now. There are 3 definite points. This is one of them. And, like, I have no idea how they managed to tell such a, like, touching and adorable love story in, like, 15 minutes with no words. Just, like, nothing else. So good. It's so good.
So it's really good.
Joel doesn't cry at this movie, you guys. Please shun him.
Here's what it is. It's that I do really like this part of the movie, and I really like the relationship that these two people have. But the thing that people always cite to me is, like, and then they couldn't have kids. Which, yeah, is sad. But I also knew that was going to happen because, like, I saw the trailer for the movie and he didn't have kids.
That doesn't make it not sad, Joel.
It's just, it's not the it's sad, but it's not like I need some time to cry now sad.
Well, okay, for me,
because it's not the crux of the whole, like, character.
No, but for me, it's a combination of things. For one, it's seeing someone and seeing people as a couple grapple with that
mm-hmm.
is very heartbreaking. And then on top of that, it gets even worse over the course of the movie because you can see how much Carl has given up on children.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, you know, they couldn't have children, but he worked with children. He was a balloon guy.
Yeah.
And they both did because she worked at the zoo his whole life, basically, until he retired from ballooning. And ballooning? I don't know. And the fact that he's gotten to a point where he's so closed off and not doesn't connect at all with children anymore mm-hmm. is like a really big like character point that changes a lot during the movie. But the combination of those things hurts most, I think.
I will say that this is the first time I've watched this movie since I got married.
Yeah.
And so
that made a difference.
That made a big difference.
Yeah.
But it didn't hit me here. It hit me when he's looking at the adventure book.
Oh, yeah.
At the end.
No, that's one of the other places I grew
up. Like that. and the first time I watched it, yeah, that was like the all really sad part of the movie.
Yeah.
But it hit me a lot stronger now.
Yeah.
Being married than it did the first time I watched it before I had, you know, even met my wife.
And I think also, like, I don't even necessarily cry at this sequence because it's sad. I cry at the sequence because there's so much love that's like really, really easy to connect with in this sequence, whether mm-hmm. it's like during, you know, happy times or sad times, and the fact that they're like there for each other consistently. Because when I first saw this movie, I honestly thought they were going to get divorced. Because there's that, like, really, really low point in the middle of it. And I was like, well, this could go well or terribly wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, like, I don't know. It's just, it's really sweet.
It is. And it's really well told. And,
You should cry at it, monster.
it's sadder to me that Ellie dies.
Yeah.
That's the sad part. That's what I see the hurt and the pain in that character. To have gone so long with this person.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he wasn't married to, but he knew this person and was friends with this person since
childhood.
Eight,
yeah.
Six, somewhere mm-hmm. in there. So, and now he's 78.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably safe to say 70 years.
Yeah.
Of being with this person.
Yeah.
So that hits me a lot worse than the kids thing.
This was, so I haven't seen this movie in a long time. I think I watched it in the theaters, and I think I maybe seen it one other time. But this was the first time for me watching this movie since both my grandparents passed away, and my grandfather passed away, 2 or 3 years before my grandmother did. So like watching this just made me think about them a lot. And that just made it 10 times worse because mm-hmm. they were the same way. Like they were together for 52, 53 years before my grandfather passed. So it was like, nope, can't handle that in this context.
I will say I fully expect this movie to get harder to watch as I get older.
Yeah, the older I get, the worse it gets.
Like, the more it's going to speak to me. Because that's the thing, it's like, there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, I understand how that speaks to me. It doesn't actually speak to me, but I understand how it speaks to me. So, there's that. But anyway, we get to the point that, I mean, the little beautiful, silently told story with just music ends with, you know, Emily dying. And so we then see the house for the first time since that, and all the land has been bought up around it.
Yeah.
Some sort of mega building is being built.
I never mentioned what
around,
it was. Something.
But he won't sell the house. Clearly, this has been an issue that's been ongoing for some time.
Yeah.
At some part of the construction thing hits the mailbox.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a...
Something backs up and backs
over
the mailbox.
Yeah, it's like a backhoe or something, yeah.
And so the mailbox has clear significance thanks to the sequence that we saw.
Yeah. Oh, we see Russell here, too. Russell's introduction is
yes.
here.
Yes.
Just the cutest little thing. I love Russell.
And he sends Russell on a snipe hunt.
Yeah.
I was in Boy Scouts. They totally sent us on snipe hunts.
I was in Girl Scouts and I never did that, but I do remember the Nematodes episode of Doug, which is very similar.
No, we would have to, because snipes only came out at night,
uh-huh.
and so we would go on snipe hunts at night. Uh-huh. So never found one.
That sounds like the perfect way to keep a bunch of obnoxious children occupied for a couple hours.
Yes, it is.
Good. Good job.
So yeah, he hits the mailbox. And then, so Carl ends up batting the guy away with his cane.
Yeah, but he smacks him a little too hard.
And I think he hits him just right with, like, the metal point. I think he's trying to bop him with the tennis balls.
Yeah, and I think he smacks him with the metal instead.
So, so then he's cited as a public menace, which I don't know exactly how the law's working in this case.
I don't know. Well, it's especially weird because, like, so the punishment in this case is to send him to the retirement home, but, like, I don't think you can force people to do that unless they're, like, really not capable of caring for themselves, which Carl clearly is.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems very weird.
And so, but the guy who he hit worked for the construction company,
mm-hmm.
and the construction company wants this out of him. So I feel like there was some sort of, like, we won't press charges if you sell your house.
Okay. Maybe that's it.
I feel like something like that happened, but then the police officer was like, well, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I don't think you're a public menace. So at some point he was cited as a public menace in a court of law.
Oh my god.
So I'm not totally sure what happens, but whatever plot-wise, he has to go to the retirement home in the morning.
But he doesn't because balloons.
So I've read a lot about how many balloons it would take to lift up a house.
How many balloons, Joel?
Okay, so there's two things, because a technical director working on the movie, when they were working on it, estimated it would require about 23 million balloons to pick up the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when they rendered that, all the balloons were like tiny, tiny, small dots.
Yeah.
And so just for art's sake, they made it, it's about 10,000 balloons, maybe closer to 11,000 balloons when the house is flying,
mm-hmm.
but then 20,600 balloons for the actual liftoff sequence.
Okay.
But they also made the balloons bigger so that they look like balloons.
Right, yeah.
And there's that little rationale, like, well, they're really big balloons. Yeah. They can carry more. Later, after the movie came out, there was an independent study that...
Best independent study.
that said the house was probably approximately 1,600 square feet.
Hmm.
And on average, a house will weigh about 60 to 100 pounds per square foot.
Huh.
And a balloon can carry about 0.009 pounds.
Oh.
Which is where they get, it's closer to 12.5 million balloons rather than 23 previously.
Well,
so it's more realistic than they originally thought.
Slightly. Yeah. I love the liftoff sequence. It's one of my favorite parts of this movie. It's just beautiful. All the colors from the balloons reflect onto things, and all the little kids are really excited to see it.
Yeah.
And the music in this movie is, of course,
the music is my favorite part
phenomenal.
Of this movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It gets stuck in my head really bad, which is unusual for score.
And they do, it's really good with having, like, themes. Like, Carl has a theme, Muntz has a different theme, there's, like, an adventure theme. So, like, there's a lot of recurring musical themes throughout this movie that I really, really like.
It's really, really good.
So, and I like that so he's lifted off, he's very serene, it's happened, he's on his way. And it's peaceful for just long enough.
There's a knock on the door.
Before this knock on the door.
I love that so much. I love that Russell had just the guts to, like, sneak slightly across the porch, knock on the door, and go right back to where he was.
And so this was... I remember this was basically the trailer for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
At one point was the liftoff, he's sitting in the chair, the knock on the door, and then the, can I come in?
No. It's so good.
Which is a really good characterization of this character.
I really love the characters in this film, and I particularly love Carl and Russell's relationship and how they change over the course of the film. It's really, really cute.
Yeah.
They're both just so tiny and round.
I like Carl so much. I like how curmudgeon he is. I like that he talks to Ellie a lot throughout this movie. But it's kind of presented as, not as like a crazy old man's talking to himself at this point, but as like a, he just doesn't care anymore. Like, what are you going to do?
It's definitely that, and it's also like, I think he's just gotten so used to talking to her mm-hmm. that, like, nah. Just gonna keep doing it, I guess.
And so he has this little fantasy sequence of dropping Russell off.
Yep.
Which I don't remember, but I really loved.
I don't even remember that either. Apparently I just totally blocked it out.
Which is nice, because I get to see the whole joke fresh again.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Basically, there's this storm coming.
Yeah.
That knocks them, not off course, but like...
It definitely does some damage.
Yeah, it does some damage to the house.
Carl manages to tie everything fragile down, and then wakes up and Russell's gotten them to South America.
I like that they kind of like... They knew that South America was where the story was, so yeah. They just kind of blacked this all out.
South.
And now we're there to go.
I still love just Ellie saying, like, we gotta go to South America. It's like America, but South is the best part. And they, like, they stumble upon Paradise Falls. Like, literally. Like, they smash into the top of the rocks, and there's Paradise Falls, and the sun's clear.
They're there, but they're on the wrong side of the rock formation thing.
Okay,
I'm not 100% sure what that's called.
It's a cliff or a... Crap, I don't know. There's probably like some very, very fancy geological term that I just don't remember. But, okay, what I don't get about this movie is, like, the point is to get the house over there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to live in Paradise Falls, you don't want to live on top of the falls. You want to live where you can see the falls. So, like... If you just left the house where it was, it would have been fine.
You could have seen the falls every morning.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't have matched the picture.
Yeah, the picture is the important part, I suppose. But it just, like, thinking about it, it's like, you're never going to see that waterfall. You're going to have to walk, like, 3 days worth of walking, apparently, to see that waterfall.
Yeah. It does seem surprising that he was estimating 3 days. Because, like... I could see everywhere he had to step.
Well, what's also weird is there was, like, definite jungle that they walked through, but when you see it here initially, there are no trees. It's literally just flat rock up there.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how that happened.
I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know. Just, like, spatially, this movie's very weird. It was very hard for me to figure out where they were trying to go and how they were getting there.
Yeah. Because I feel like there's a lot of... When they're making these kind of animated movies, they have a model
of the set. A map of
like,
where stuff is.
I feel like things like The Simpsons, like, you can go and find a blueprint of The Simpsons house.
Yeah,
like they've made that.
And I...
But there's no blueprint of, like, how Paradise Falls works and the route that they took.
And it feels really weird and kind of like... It just feels less solid because of that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it made it a lot harder for me to understand where the hell they were going.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that.
So they have to drag the house. I don't even quite understand why they have to drag the house, but they have to drag the house.
Why they're getting floated over there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And reasons.
I don't know. And then there's like, there's a lot of studies done to like how many balloons it takes to lift up the house, but there's nothing about like
how
strong your hose has to be.
Have to drag. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this house still this heavy? Can you just walk a house somewhere?
Especially, like, so Russell compares it to walking a parade balloon.
Yeah.
But, like, have you seen how many people have to hold down a parade balloon? It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of fully grown people who are not three heads tall old men or tiny, tiny wilderness scouts. And, like, there's a lot of weirdness with, like, Carl has a lot of stamina for an old dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot.
Yeah.
And, like, he hasn't been using stairs. How does he walk all this way? A lot. I don't know.
Sheer determination.
I guess so.
So, Russell has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. And he finds Kevin.
He does find Kevin.
Kevin. I really like Kevin. Kevin might be one of my all-time favorite characters in this movie, I gotta be honest. Mostly because, like... A, Kevin's a girl, and that's funny. B, Kevin makes these little warbly noises that are just perfectly timed and beautiful and so stupid.
I love the whole, like, Kevin's a girl, and they still call her Kevin.
Yeah,
and that's
Kevin.
That's really funny, and I get the joke, but that means that the characters in this movie are Carl, Russell, Kevin, and Doug. And I get the wrong one for the wrong character whenever I'm talking about this movie. Every time.
Yeah.
Because they're all super generic boy names.
Yeah. It's true. I hadn't really thought about it. Yeah, there's like no girls in this movie other than Kevin.
And Kevin's Kevin.
So cute.
Yeah. Meet Kevin. I like Kevin. Kevin's funny. And we also meet Doug pretty quickly after this.
Doug. We get some Doug clips in here too.
Yeah, we With meet the... Alpha, Gamma, and Beta.
Yeah. I love the dogs in this movie. They're such dogs. It's so cute.
I do like that they're all dogs, and I like that even the bad guy dogs
are still dogs. Still very susceptible to tennis balls and squirrels. Yes,
because we've had, like, bad guy dogs in Disney movies.
They're very serious.
Who are very loyal.
Very serious.
So, like, in Oliver and Company.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Those guys were...
Those are scary dogs. Mm-hmm. These are not scary dogs. Like, they're a little intimidating, maybe, but nah, not scary dogs at all.
They're threatening dogs, but they still have dog issues to deal with.
Still dogs.
So, I like Doug a lot.
Doug is such a dog.
Yes.
Such a dog. One of my very good friends had a golden retriever when we were growing up, and it's Doug. That's Doug. Oh.
The squirrel thing is brought up a lot. The I have just met you and I love you is brought up a lot.
Yeah.
And Point is never brought up enough for me.
No, I love that.
I love Point, and I love that he points with the whole straight line, because that's like a direct reference to how Pluto used to point in the Mickey Mouse things.
Yep.
And I love how he points at something and is totally wrong and fixes his point.
So precious. He's so precious.
And I wish that Point would get more acknowledgement as a Doug moment.
I love him. He just makes me want to cuddle a dog.
Yeah.
He makes me want to go get a dog. Like, yep, this is mine now. Mm-hmm.
And so...
They're kind of a ragtag bunch because yes. Doug wants Kevin. Kevin wants chocolate from Russell, and Russell has to follow Carl, and Carl just wants to get on the other side of the cliff.
Okay, because he has to assist Carl.
Yeah. He has to get his elderly assistance patch. That's why he was there in the first place.
And Carl tries to, like, play this multi-game of fetch with Kevin and Doug to get rid of them, and it doesn't work. And so... Russell's trying to set up a tent.
Yeah.
And tents are hard.
Tents are hard,
especially because he's using a dome tent and not a pyramid or triangle tent.
Yeah.
And trying to set it up by himself. And dome tents are not meant to be set up by yourself.
No, you don't have another person to hold the other side. Yeah, so I think what I really like character-wise about this movie is that Russell and Carl as characters complement each other so well, especially in, like, what they need in life really fits together perfectly. And this is the first moment we see of that. Like, Carl's asking him about his family. He's asking, like, well, hasn't your dad ever shown you how to set up a tent? And it's clear that his dad's kind of absent and very busy, and he has, I guess, a stepmom, maybe?
Yeah, this is the first Pixar or Disney movie where... A divorce is acknowledged for a reason of absentee parent.
Yeah.
There's plenty of dead parents, and there's a couple of mystery parents, like Andy's dad in Toy Story.
Where did Andy's dad go?
We're not clear on what happened there.
Yeah.
But this is the first time where it's pretty, I mean, it's not explicitly said, but it's pretty explicitly said.
Yeah.
Like, that Russell's parents were divorced.
And that, you know, it's clear that, like, both, I think her name is Phyllis, I think, his stepmom.
Yeah.
And his dad... care for him, but it's just been awkward and kind of difficult, especially when his dad's so busy, to find good, like, quality time. And Carl has the exact opposite problem of, like, he just doesn't have anyone. There's no one left, basically. So I think that it's really nice how subtly they work those character traits in, while not being obliquely like, here is child. You have no child, especially because he's so old, like, not your kid, that's stupid. But they still, like, fit together so well in their needs as people to have that sort of companionship.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I like it.
No, it's good. It's good.
Thanks.
And so then the dog trio shows up. They've tracked Doug's collar.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, this is where we figure out Kevin's a Kevin's a girl.
Yes, you figured out Kevin's a girl.
What struck me as funny, though, watching this now, is that, like, you know what? It's actually pretty reasonable for them to assume that Kevin was a boy, because most birds, if it's a male, they have more bright, colorful plumage. So, like, not a terrible assumption, all things considered.
So, the dogs bring them to...
Bring everybody to the blimp.
Yes.
Which is somewhere... Again, I have no idea where this stuff is. It seems like it's the down the cliff is what it feels like to me, but I don't know if that's actually true. But I don't know where they're going. They're going to the blimp.
They go to the blimp. Then we meet Charles Muntz, who is older, maybe.
Yeah. Questionable.
Mystery age discrepancy that we all have to
really weird
gloss over now.
Really weird.
And so he has lots and lots of dogs, and he's trained them to do everything.
Yeah.
And so...
Cook for him.
Yes.
Clean things. It's very weird.
And so he's happy to, like, share, and this is cool, and then, like, slowly becomes the bad guy when he finds out that...
Yeah.
They know about Kevin.
It's kind of a nice little moment of realization there. And it's so cute because, like, Carl's so excited. He's so excited. He's over the moon. Mm-hmm. but, yeah, it slowly comes to light that, like, this bird has driven him insane.
I really like Muntz here because, like, he talks about other people come in to try and steal his stuff and, like, then, like, this person said this very reasonable reason they might be there. And, like, you know, and then gets to them, says, like, those people who were trying to steal his bird probably were there to, like, catalog plants and stuff.
Joel, what happened to those people? Did he kill people, Joel?
I'm assuming he killed people. But, so while he is, like, gone paranoid and done bad things, I'm not totally sure why Carl is trying to... not acknowledge that they know who Kevin is and can help him capture this bird.
I don't know. Especially because he's so fond of him.
He's very fond of him. Nobody is, like, appalled to see all these other dead animals in the thing. Muntz has vowed to bring him back alive. That's the whole point of the thing. So he's not going to kill Kevin.
They know that Kevin has babies, but there's no evidence that he wouldn't also take the babies with Kevin.
I guess
if Carl is... Okay, the only thing I can think of is Carl worked at a zoo for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So maybe Carl is disenchanted with the idea of zoos and doesn't want animals to be removed from their natural habitat. But that's a really
big stretch.
It is. That's all I got, though. I tried.
But, like...
Also because the plot doesn't move without it.
It was just... It was so weird for, like... For Carl to be like, we gotta keep this a secret, and for Russell to be the one that's like, here's all the information that you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like that would be switched.
Reversed, yeah.
Where, like, Muntz would say something about, like, I'm gonna put him in a cage!
Yeah.
And then Russell would be like, oh, this is bad, and Carl's the one that's like, here's all the information, childhood hero.
Yeah, it seems a little strange. So. I don't know. Regardless, Kevin shows up. Hey, yes. Kevin.
So, we get the chase sequence.
Chase sequence number one.
Yes.
There are many.
This is the part of the movie where I want to play the video game.
Yes.
Where we ride on Kevin.
Yes, agreed.
This is the point where I wrote down on my notes, I'm going to need Doug to stop making sad noises.
He does make very sad noises.
Because, like, his voice is, like, sad enough, but, like, when he makes dog sad noises, oh. I'm just like, oh... Oh, I don't care for this. Because he gets getting hit by the other dogs.
Yeah.
One of the dogs, when they fall off the cliff, one of the dogs makes a Wilhelm scream.
He does. I noted that, too. Kevin is hurt. So yes. I gotta take Kevin home.
Yes, because he can't walk anymore.
And Doug is still with them, and Muntz is tracking him.
With the collar.
The thing in his collar.
Yes. And so, somewhere in here, Carl stops using his walker.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what happens, but it's a nice little
moment.
Mm-hmm. It's nice because it's so unacknowledged, when you realize at some point in this movie, and it's probably different for different people, but at some point you realize he's not using a walker, and he hasn't for a while.
Yeah.
So you don't really know where it happened, but it's kind of cool little bit.
Russell talks about his dad more here. Mm-hmm. And there's a line that, like, almost made me cry. It was just one little line that he just kind of, like, says, and then, like, you know, they continue on with the story or whatever. It's, like, right towards the end, but he says, that might sound boring. He's talking about eating ice cream with his dad. And so that might sound boring, but I think the boring stuff is the stuff I remember most. And that, like, yeah. Well, you know, especially when you don't see someone as often, or you have a falling out, or, you know, somebody passes away, it's those little things that you miss more so than the bigger stuff. I mean, you don't miss that stuff, you remember it, but it's the everyday little stuff that makes the most difference.
It's a super insightful thing for that 9-year-old kid to realize.
It is. Like, but it's also so simple.
It's very true, and I understand where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And it's right. Like, he's very right in that observation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because, I've had that where I was like, oh, we don't do this thing anymore.
Yeah.
And this thing is stuff. Like, And, like, how, you know, it's like, oh, I always, you know, sat on the right.
Yeah.
You know, like, really simple things like that. So, we get to the part where Muntz has tracked them to Kevin.
He sets the house on fire.
Yeah, then he sets the house on fire.
What the hell? Just, okay.
I mean, he's already established that he's killed people, so, like,
I know, but
setting a house on fire is not that bad.
No, but this guy's really crazy.
But so then Russell's really mad at Carl, and he's like, you let him take Kevin. I'm like, it's a bit more nuanced than that.
This,
like,
maniac set his house on fire. He's killed people, Russell.
I feel like Russell's looking at this a little more black and white than it really is.
And I also think that, like, Carl has not tried to explain to this child, like, this man is really dangerous, and I'm really sorry about the bird, but, like, our livelihoods matter a little bit more.
So, they have their, you know,
their little tiff.
As standard, we're at this point in the movie.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of the way through falling out argument. And so he yells at everybody. Russell goes away. Doug goes away.
And they finally make it to Paradise Falls. They finally...
Yes.
The house finally makes it. And, you know, he doesn't really know what to do, so he sits down with their scrapbook.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees that there's stuff that he hasn't seen in it. He's always stopped where it says, you know,
stuff,
like...
Stuff I'm going to do.
Yeah, stuff I'm going to do. And there's all sorts of pictures of their lives together.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Megan cries again. This is the worst part for me, I think.
I don't know who took all those pictures, because they're very candid moments. Like, there's like one or two where I'm like, that was taken with a timer. I get that. But there's two of them, and
I don't know.
In a very, like, intimate, private, candid moment.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
So, but no.
Don't question it.
But no, this is the moment, again, like being married now and not being married the first time, this hit me. And then this was the part of the thing. So, like, the first time I watched it, like, I understand this is the sad moment. I understand where they're going with this. And I understand, like, how you feel about this. But this time I was like, oh, okay.
I was chatting with our friend Aaron while I was watching this, and I was like, oh god, it's gotten to that point with the scrapbook, and her only comment was, up is the worst! Which, like, yeah, right around this time of the movie, up is the worst. Just the worst.
So, he, like, they'll go have a new adventure thing, and I don't know when she wrote that. Like, that's part of, like, the, because...
So, I think she wrote it. She had it in the hospital when she was, like, clearly not well.
Which makes it worse.
Yeah, she was... And honestly, you know, if Carl still had to go to work, maybe she just put all those things in while she was ill.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what she did with her time.
Yeah.
Sorry to make that worse.
So, he's revived to go and set things right.
I guess.
Like, there's nothing in there that's, like, this means I should save the bird.
No, but...
but it's
maybe it's a Ellie would probably want me to save yeah. the bird. Or at least not let the child die in the wilderness. Maybe that's not the best idea.
And then we get the climax, which, just looking at it, is the weirdest climax to a movie I've ever seen in my life.
Like, I like this movie, and it has a lot of emotional impact for me. What the hell happened in this movie? This plot line is so weird.
No, because this, like, especially the climax feels like it was written via, like, Mad Libs game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like a boy flying on a blank. Lawn blower. It's captured by, and must be saved by, a blank old man.
In
piloting a blank house.
In order to try and save a blank giant weird bird from a blank old movie star / adventurer who has a team of blank talking dogs.
And they get into a blank aerial dog fight.
Who knows? Oh, it's so weird. It's so weird.
So, I do think it's funny that the dogs get into a dog fight in the sky.
I love it so much.
I think that's, you know, somebody being like, ha ha.
I also, like, reminded myself via note, like, mailman is the cutest thing in this movie. The fact that all the dogs refer to any human as mailman.
Well, no, they refer to Carl, or to Russell as a mailman, because he's in uniform.
Oh, is that what it is?
Because he's a small mailman.
He's a small mailman. Oh, it's so cute. It's so cute. And then, Mutz is going to dump the child out of the blimp.
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
Well, yeah, but, like, he's, like, nine.
I mean,
he's a precious little jelly bean of a person.
He's a bad guy. I have no explanation beyond he's a bad guy.
So I think part of what it is that we've had a lot of, like, bad guys in Pixar movies. There's almost always a distinct villain in a Pixar movie. But they've never been that bad. They've never, like, killed people or, like, you know, tried to murder things. It's never been like that. It's always been like, oh, you've, like, messed up what's going on, or, like...
Hopper tried to murder things.
And I distinctly remember doing the Bugs Life podcast and be like, Hopper tried to murder them! So, like, yeah, the point still stands. I think, especially, like, you know, in sharp contrast to Disney movies, which really try and gloss over that stuff, like, you know, people falling off things.
Well, Muntz got the classic falling to their death.
He did.
Thing.
So that the characters were scot-free of murder. But I think, yeah, I think it's just, especially when it's, like, people and not, like, ants. Like, I probably kill a dozen ants on a daily basis. But, like, people? Small children? Yeah.
So, I do, like, it's really hard to, like, talk through this climax in order, because it's just everywhere, and, like...
There's so much that happens, and honestly, even watching it, I get a little confused about who's where and what they're doing.
Yeah, they're on the blimp at some point, there's, like, a sword fight with the walker.
That's funny.
Alpha gets put in the cone of shame at one point.
That's funny.
The dogs come in on airplanes, and they do Star Wars Red 5 standing by, except they do Gray 5, because they're dogs, and they see gray.
Yeah, they don't see colors.
And so that's, like, a cute little Star Wars joke. But also, Star Wars joke related, when he says squirrel, and they crash into each other, at the exact same sequence that Darth Vader's platoon in the trench run crashes into each other.
Next! That's awesome. That's so good.
So... That made me laugh. That's a nice little Star Wars reference.
Yep. There's all sorts of weirdness that happens in the sequence. Like, at some point, Carl has to get Kevin out of the cage, and he does so by distracting dogs with tennis balls from his cane, and that's really good. And there's just all sorts of, like, little stuff that makes this sequence really, like, silly and fun, but, like, it's long. It's real long.
It's
and complicated.
It's a long, extended, complicated sequence, and, like, I just kind of imagine the setup, like, the storyboards.
Yeah, it must have been so weird.
It was like, did these storyboards, like, they just probably had them on, like, giant sheets that keep moving back and forth.
Yeah,
like, well, that can't have happened yet because, okay, well, let's move these five pages over here. But like, but it worked in the moment.
Yeah.
Like watching the movie, I'm like, all right, I'm falling.
Watching it, it was fine.
But like, even if you had like shut it off at that moment, be like, describe what you just saw. I'd be like,
dogs.
There was a thing, and it definitely happened in an order.
Muntz had a sword.
Yes.
yeah.
So, but it ends with everybody being safe, hooray!
Yay, except for Muntz, who's probably dead.
Yes.
Whoops.
Well, he fell off a thing.
Yeah, he did. The house is also gone.
Yeah, the house is gone.
The house is also gone.
But that's okay, because it's just a house.
It's just a house. And he did, we forgot to mention, when Carl leaves, when Carl has to move the house to go fight the employment, anyway, he has to take a bunch of stuff out of the house, and he leaves their little chairs by the falls. That also made me a little bit teary.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie. No, especially, my grandparents had chairs. Mm-hmm. My grandparents had, like, non-matching chairs that they always sat in next to each other and held hands. Mm. So, like, that was extra, like, that is the grandparents. So, those little chairs have a lot of feelings.
Gotcha.
We
get back. Russell is going to be awarded his badge. So, as in Boy Scouts.
Yes.
Merit badges don't work that way.
No.
Which is fine, because he's not a Boy Scout. He's a wilderness scout. So, like, he's just got to get all the badges. But then, Brandon, the kid right next to him, does not have all his badges. Brandon's apparently a giant slacker, because he has, like, a third of the badges that apparently he needs.
Jeez, Brandon.
But he's still getting to be a senior wilderness scout?
Yeah, I don't know.
So
that's not how badges are.
This is where the movie really falls apart for me, when the wilderness scout rules are inconsistent.
This is the talking dogs and the man who should be way older than he is and the flying house because of balloons, and you're upset about merit badges.
They're clearly inconsistent rules.
Mm-hmm.
But Russell's dad can't be there, and so Carl is there.
And then he gives him the little bottle cap that Ellie gave him, and this is where Megan cries again.
Because this family throws nothing away.
Nope.
Because everything they had as children, they still have.
Yep. And, that's pretty much the end. They sit on the curb and they eat ice cream. They do red car, blue car. Which, like, that's not a fair game. There's totally more red cars in the road than blue ones.
Yeah, but he's still having to cheat in, like, red car / fire hydrant.
Yeah, that's fair. And yeah, that was up.
It was up. It's a very sweet movie.
If you asked me to explain to you what happened in Up, it would sound totally stupid. Just really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, even now, like, rewatching it again, I'm like, this plot makes, like, no sense.
No, it doesn't.
But it's Pixar, and they do that thing where they're like, did you need more feelings in your life? And I'm like, well, no, but I'm crying now, so I might as well. So the emotional resonance and the character development is what really makes this movie good, because the plot is, like, real questionable.
Yeah, the plot is very hamstringy.
Yeah.
And I think it goes back to, like, the idea was not a story idea. It was, like, a feeling idea.
Yeah, it was, like, a vague thought that got made into a really good movie.
And it is a very good movie, and I strongly enjoy Carl.
Yeah.
And he is a character that I feel like carries the movie.
He really does.
Which is, like, Wally's that kind of way. Wally's a character that carries me, but a lot of Pixar things were, like, Toy Story is very buddy with multiple things. Monsters Inc. is very buddy with multiple things. Same with Finding Nemo. There's, like, there's a main character, but the main character's not carrying the movie.
Right, but this one is really Carl.
Yeah.
Like, Russell helps, but he's not nearly as important a character.
Yeah.
Development wise.
So, and I really enjoy Carl, and Carl could have gone very south. And
yeah. He doesn't. He's the right mix of, like, crotchety old man and, like, really endearing, lovable person.
Yeah. And then part of that, I think, is you're so sympathetic to him.
Yeah. It's so easy to be, too, and they set it up so well.
Mm-hmm.
So easy to really sympathize with Carl right off the bat. So
I really liked Up.
It's good.
Up's a really good movie.
It makes me cry a lot.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, well.
I mean, it's a good movie. I have no complaints about it. Yeah. I have complaints about it, but like...
Okay, yeah, it's not... You know, it's still altogether with its like, weird plot issues.
What is happening?
A totally, totally enjoyable film.
So, next time we're going to be doing Toy Story 3.
Yay. Another sad one.
I know, right? This is where they got confident in their ability to make you sad.
Yeah, this is where they were like they, did you want to cry? Do you need some cathartic release of tears? Let's go.
All right, until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.